Welcome to the Work Camper Show, a podcast devoted to helping you discover how to finance your RV travel dreams. I'm Steve Anderson, the president of Work Camper News. Each one of our episodes will either introduce you to people who are already living the RV lifestyle or to opportunities to work short-term jobs. You'll also learn how to hit the road the right way and make the most of every opportunity. Now let's turn over today's show to your host, Greg Gerber.
Thank you, Steve. Today I'm going to interview a couple who has been RVing and work camping at a variety of jobs for more than 10 years. If you're just exploring the RV lifestyle and work camping options, consider enrolling in The Dreamer's Journey. It's a new online course produced by Work Camper News. Life is way too short to keep your dreams on hold, so don't be held back by fear because you were designed for more. Get started with the RV lifestyle the right way with this comprehensive guide. For just $29.95 for 1 year of access, Dreamers have unlimited viewing of 50-plus videos to learn things like what type of RV to buy, goal setting, how to budget for the adventure, developing a positive mindset, setting up a domicile, operating a small business on the road, plus all about work camping and how to find the right job for you. Each video is 30 to 90 minutes long, giving an in-depth coverage on each topic. There's no wrong time to get started. So for more information, visit www.rvdreamersjourney.com. Barbara and Brad Cunningham started camping in the 1990s, using tents and occasionally renting an RV. In 2009, they took the plunge and bought their first 35-foot Class A motorhome. They've been work camping for years, but on a schedule that allows them to play for a while, then work for a while. If they really wanted to check out an area, it just made sense for the couple to find a work camping job. Whenever they do that, the Cunninghams really enjoy becoming local residents for a few months while enjoying nearby recreation opportunities. They work several jobs at RV parks, where Barbara tended to duties in the front office, checking in guests and taking reservations, while Brad worked outside, maintaining the property and guiding people to their campsites. One campground included horse stables, and another was on the Oregon coast. They even worked for an RV park where the sites were owned by the RVers themselves. One job they both really enjoyed involved taking care of three rental homes for a private owner in Alaska. In fact, the couple spent several seasons working that job. Barbara and Brad would greet new renters when they came in for a few days or a few weeks, then clean the homes and get them ready for new renters to arrive. It was the ability to live in Alaska that made the job so enjoyable because the Cunninghams had lots of time to explore the region. They initially thought it would be fun to work in Alaska, but then realized there was far more to see and do than they thought. That's why they came back for a second season a few years later. They would watch glaciers push ice into the ocean that would become floating blue icebergs. They could watch whales feeding and playing just like people watch on National Geographic episodes. They watched bears trying to catch salmon jumping out of the water, or they tried their hand at fishing themselves. Barbara and Brad also got to enjoy a dog sled tour. They share some tips for people interested in visiting Alaska and describe the Milepost publication that helped them find everything they needed, from things to do to the locations of gas stations and grocery stores, which are spread out over small towns and big cities. To tell us more about their experience in Alaska, please welcome Barbara and Brad Cunningham to the show. Thanks for joining me today, Barbara and Brad. I really appreciate the time. How long had you been RVing before you decided to come off the road?
We started in early 2009, but prior to that, we'd been in RVs from everything from tents to motorhomes from 1990s on.
Okay. What kind of RV did you have?
When we went full time, we ended up with a Class A and a variety of them, but around the 35 to 40 footers.
Okay. Why did you pick a Class A?
Primarily, we pulled a, you know, a small Jeep or something behind it, and we liked being able to stop at rest stops or stay overnight as we're traveling. The self-contained method of it, and then being able to disconnect the tow vehicles and go do our touring or wandering around and doing things with it.
Mm-hmm. Had you been work camping the entire time you were RVing?
Off and on. We do some for a season, and then we lay off the season and do something else, and, you know, just tour or go visit people or what have you, and then go back and work camp again for some.
Okay, so you were working for a while and playing for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Primarily, if we wanted to stay in a place for a period of time, it just made sense to us to work camp because, one, we could get the benefits of work camping with a free site and all the other amenities, but we get to know an area better. It would become more like, you know, a new home to us, and we would find the local restaurants and the local things to do rather than just being a 2-week tourist.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. What attracted you to work camping in the first place?
Initially, when we'd done the research before I retired and we actually hit the road full time, but it was one of those, you know, we didn't want to do all and then nothing type thing. So we thought it'd be a good way to dip our toe into the RV world and still transition, basically, figure out what we needed to have, what we didn't need to have, and, you know, talk to other people that were in the RV lifestyle and learn from them before we made the decision to go completely full time and break all the ties.
What do you like most about the RVing experience, or what did you?
I liked just seeing the countryside, the things that were out there. And, you know, when you live in a place for a long period of time, you kind of get used to what the attractions are, and that's it. And you try to cram stuff into a 2-week vacation, and you really don't get a good feel for the details. And it was kind of nice to be able to go to a place, stay for a season, and become a local, basically. Mm-hmm. And get to know what stuff was around there and find some of those little hidden gems that you miss when you're trying to cram it into 2 weeks.
How did you often find those hidden gems?
A lot of it, you know, if you're working, you talk to the other campers that are there and ask them, you know, what have you done? Where'd you go? What'd you see today?
Well, and your bosses.
Yeah,
people who own the campground or who come there frequently or who live in the area but come to camp for a weekend or whatever, but the people that are familiar with the area.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of jobs did you work as general rule?
They were varied, from working at a park. So lots of times Barb would be up in the front office taking reservations and
checking
people in and that type of thing. And then I would work out in the park. So in some cases we had RV owners that wanted to make sure that you parked in the right places in the right direction. So we would actually guide the camper in and help them park. Otherwise you go through and just make sure that things were cleaned up and ready for new people. Maintenance and, landscaping, lawn care type of things. And, then down a few instances, like our Alaska, we helped take care of, rental units. So, we were parked on site, but it was kind of, you know, clean up a house, get it ready for occupancy, greet the new people as they come in,
and then leave them alone.
And while they're occupied the quarters, then we were free to go tour around and see what there was in and around the area.
Were most of the jobs that you were working at in campgrounds?
Yeah.
All but the Alaska one. Our Alaska job was not a campground. It was a like vacation home rental. Mm-hmm. And so he had campsite for our motorhome, but we took care of homes. But I believe everything else we did was one type of campground or another.
Yeah.
One was a campground / horse boarding facility. So you could bring your horse and go ride on BLM land. So there was stables in the back, but campground in the front.
Another one was on the Oregon coast. So you... You know, in the morning when you got ready to go to work, you could go out there. There was a resident pod of gray whales that would swim by, and you'd watch them in the morning, coffee, and then go to work.
No, those are experiences that are hard to beat.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. One of them was a really high end. You had to have a Class A motorhome to be there, and the people owned their site and then rented when they weren't there. And so you got, you know, the feel of a little more upper crust and, you know, nicer facility as opposed to nature and the outdoors. So you can get all kinds of experiences depending on where you go and what kind of campground you choose to work at.
Were there some jobs that you really liked better than others?
Wow, it's hard.
Yeah, that one's hard to say. You know, you have to be open and amenable to working with people. It's part of the job. And so some places, like every other job you may ever have, you're going to have people that are easier to get along with than others. We didn't find anybody that we left a job for, but sometimes you had to sit down and have a conversation about, you know, what's expected and on both sides and, you know, how things are going and if you want to make any changes and that sort of thing. So I can't say we had one we didn't like. There was benefits to all.
And we had actually some that we liked enough that we came back.
Absolutely. Alaska was one of them. But you just, you take the best that you can out of the experience, even if it's not all pleasant. And it's a short-term thing. It's not like your career. So if you don't like that place, maybe you don't go back again. Or you go back to a different place. I mean, you just have to have some flexibility about it. And the experiences we had with those places are ones we'll never forget.
Mm-hmm. Now, you found this one in Alaska and you worked there 2 summers. Is that what you said?
Yep.
Yeah.
Three years apart. We went up like among our one of our first summers on the road. We knew we wanted to go to Alaska. So that was our way to get our trip paid to Alaska, was to go work. And then we liked it so much that 3 years later, we went back, same guy.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of jobs were you doing for that company?
It was basically a private individual. He owned 3 vacation homes on the side of the mountain, right next to a glacier-fed lake. And we would prep the house for the new guests. When the guests got there, we'd show them around, show them how things worked. We were familiar with the area, so we would tell them, you know, here's things to go see and things to do, and help them if they needed contact information or what have you. Then landscaping and light maintenance to make sure the place was up and stayed running. And then after they left, we'd have turnaround time, so we'd clean it up and get it ready for the next set of guests.
Were you the only set of work campers at that time working at the chalet?
At that time, yeah. He got busier after we left, and I think there's an additional chalet that he built, and then now there's at least a couple of work camper couples that work for him now.
Okay. So basically you were getting the guests, the chalet ready for occupancy by the guests, and then once it was cleaned up and they were checked in, they pretty much were on their own until it was time for them to check out. So you never heard from them unless they needed something.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. And we tried to stay low profile, out of the way. And, you know, during the days we'd go wandering around the area and, you know, we'd visit things and do things. And where it was located is on the Kenai Peninsula. So you've got the Russian River just around the corner, which is the world-class salmon fishing. And we weren't too far from Seward, and there was the fjord cruises and sea life centers there. And
Alaska Railroad.
The Alaska Railroad ran right down by the chalet. You'd see it every morning. So there was just all kinds of things to do in and around that that peninsula.
Why did you want to work in Alaska?
Initially, it was just to go see. You know, just to say we'd been there. But after we got there, it really turns out to be one of my favorite places, just because of the, you know, the sheer diversity, but the nature that's there, the forests, the mountains, the glacier lakes, and everything from grasslands and wildlife to the ocean coast and the marine life that's there. Just, you know, it's such a broad spectrum.
People don't understand what it's like until they actually get up there and can experience it, and they can get out on one of these ocean, well, I don't know if you'd call it a cruise, but you'd go out there and you'd watch the glaciers calve, and you'd see this incredibly blue ice floating in the ocean as well that has calved off of the
blue ice there, and the glacier fed lakes had this unique turquoise color and that you don't see anywhere else in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was really neat. And like you say, out of Seward, there's the, you could take short cruise, you know, 2 or 3 hour cruise to an all day long cruise in and around the Kenai Fjords. And you could watch the humpback whales as they did their thing, and killer whales. You could go up next to the glaciers and watch them calve, and just unbelievable things that you only see on National Geographic, and here you are seeing them in life.
Right. Yeah, that's really cool. And what did you think about the extended sunlight?
That was actually my favorite part. There's a lot of people that can't understand. You know, they get there and there's that light and it's midnight or after, and they're like, how do you go to sleep? And I never had a problem. We remember on the 4th of July, Seward had a big fireworks display, but it didn't start until midnight because that was the closest you could get to dark. And it still, you had shadows on the ground. So it was light enough. So.
That is weird to be able to look out your RV window after midnight and be able to look all the way across the compound because it's still light out.
Oh, there were times that we would sit there and, you know, you're going, oh my gosh, I'm really tired. What's the deal? And you'd look at your watch and it's 2 a.m. and it's still, you know, shadows out there and it's like twilight. So you're kind of, oh yeah, it is kind of time to go to bed.
What were some of your favorite activities to do in Alaska?
I liked going to the various towns and what they had to offer as far as little craft fairs, going to the, like I was saying, the Kenai Fjords tours.
Every one of them's different.
Yeah. The dog sled tours during the summer, go see the new puppies. watching the fishermen when the salmon run. It's called combat fishing because they're standing next to each other and all these hooks are flying and they're trying to get a salmon. So you know, just the nature.
Did you ever have an opportunity to watch any of the bears try to compete for a salmon?
Oh, yeah. In fact, during the fishing time, lots of times you'd see these fishermen lining the bank, and so you'd see a fisherman, bear, fisherman, you know. And we took a river float trip on occasion, and as you were going by, we saw a mama bear and a couple cubs and
fishing.
Out there fishing.
You weren't unnerved by that?
Not at all.
Okay.
They're more interested in fish than you.
And as long as you, I guess, don't come real close to them, they're not going to bother you either.
They really aren't interested in you. You just have to be aware of your surroundings. We went on a hike. A family came to visit us up there while we were there. We went on a big old hike, and one crossed the hiking trail right in front of us. But they were interested in going down to the river to get their salmon. They weren't interested in us. So you just keep your distance and give them the respect they deserve. They really won't mess with you.
Mm-hmm. There's a publication called Milepost, if I'm not mistaken, up in Alaska, that addresses everything that you're going to see at a specific milepost along the highways. And there aren't very many highways in Alaska, believe it or not. And so these milepost guides really allow you to see what's in that area, and they tell you everything that, you know, businesses to visit and places to go.
Yeah, that's one thing I'd say for anybody that's wanting to go to Alaska to drive up there is get a copy of the milepost.
It goes all the way through Canada.
And you just pick the road, and instead of an address, you know, in the lower 48, we're used to an address, you know, 12345 any street, whatever. And up there it is mile marker 121 on, you know, sure, the highway is where the place is. So you get kind of used to that, and the milepost tells you everything: gas stations, lodging, restaurants, attractions, and you can just go through there and you can plan your trip and know what's going on.
Well,
and
campgrounds advertise in there too.
Yeah. And so it is something that should be at your fingertips the entire time you're going up and back.
Did you face any challenges when you were RVing in Alaska?
Oh,
we had a mechanical difficulty with our motorhome, and sometimes it's difficult to find someone that can work on your stuff. We ended up finding someone in Alaska or in Anchorage that could do that. But I mean, if you're out in the middle of nowhere, that might be an issue.
Okay.
We'd heard horror stories coming up and down the Alaska Highway of broken windshields, but I think we never experienced that. And I think it was because in order to work for the chalets like we did, he wanted us up there a little bit early. And the season in Alaska is kind of Labor Day or Memorial Day to Labor Day. And we came in about mid-May, so we were early. And going up the Alaska Highway, most of the campgrounds didn't really even open until the 1st of May. And so we would not have the traffic in front of us. The roads weren't beat up like they can get during the middle of the summer. And then when we came back, we didn't leave till mid-September. So the tourists and everyone had skied out and left, and the roads weren't quite as bad. And that's kind of where you get your wind is people screaming up and down that highway, and you catch a big rock thrown by a truck and it breaks your windshield.
Mm-hmm. Now, what were some of the perks that you were able to enjoy while we're camping in Alaska?
Complimentary.
Yeah, one of the big things is because of taking care of the chalets like we did, and we wanted to tell the people what was around, the local tour places would offer a complimentary tour for us in order for us to tell other people, here's what you can do. Uh-huh. So, again, like I say, the Kenai Fjords tour, the dinner cruise, we got that complimented to us. The dog sleds, we got complimented to us. There were a variety of different things that we got worked out that way that we were able to take advantage of. And, gosh, what other things?
Well, and our owner, the owner of the chalet, is a very nice man, lived in Anchorage. So we were an hour and a half from him, but he'd been born and raised there. So he was able to tell us where to go, what to do to enjoy our stay there. So it was nice to have a local that you knew what was going on and could help you navigate the area. And of course, we got pay for the work that we did. And so it basically paid our trip both up and back. And we paid almost $7 a gallon, even at that time in Canada, for gas. So it was nice to have that extra money to be able to get up there and back without breaking the bank.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. when you mentioned that you had gone to the dog sleds, did you actually ride on one of the dog sleds?
Yeah, summertime they take the sleds off and put wheels on them, but they hook the dogs up to a team and load you up, and you go running on a course with the dogs.
They train them that way.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the dogs love it, and they have a ball doing it. And you get a, you know, the experience of riding the dog sled.
Okay, that's neat. And you said that you enjoyed a dinner cruise as well?
Yep, the Kenai Fjords cruise would go out into the fjord, and that was one of those things, like I said, that you could see all manner of marine life, from the humpbacks to the killer whales and the calving of glaciers and such. And then they had a dinner that they had set up, a little area that they docked the boat, and you went off into a big dining hall and got fed a dinner and got to kind of wander around the trails there, and then back up on the boat and back to Seward. So,
okay. And when you were out there in Alaska, especially the second time, did you see more this time than you did the time before because you knew what you were looking to experience?
It's kind of one of those things. We went back and saw the things that we really liked from the time before, but then we also went and saw the things that we didn't have a chance to see in the first time around. We went with the owner of the chalets to some locals fishing and stocking
the
there.
Dip netting.
Yeah, the dip netting.
And wasn't the train the second trip?
The train was the second trip. We rode the Alaska Railroad, got on it, and rode out to a glacier and back, and just kind of did a variety of things that we didn't have time for the first time.
Oh, sure. Would you go again?
Yeah.
Yeah. Silly question.
We talked about, but not in our motorhome, you know.
Okay.
And just do the vacation type thing, but I don't think I'd trade that for anything. That was one of the highlights of our RVing years.
Hmm. When you had mentioned the Alaska Railroad, did you go all the way up to Denali?
The first time we were there, we actually, after we finished our stint at the chalets, we left Anchorage and drove up with the motorhome and stayed in Denali. We didn't take the train.
No, the train was a day trip.
But yeah, we did go up to Denali that one time.
Okay. Is there any advice that you'd give to people who are considering becoming a work camper or visiting Alaska?
A couple things. Is for the Alaska side of it, like I said, by the milepost, you can get them at you can get them online, I think, anymore. You can
probably
order them. But the milepost should be your Bible. That's got probably as much of information as you could ever need. And as far as Alaska is a whole lot bigger than you think.
It is indeed.
If you look at a map, and I tell people this all the time, if you look at usual maps of the United States, they have Alaska and Hawaii in this little window down in the corner. And you go, okay, fine, that's good enough. Well, when we were on the Kenai Peninsula, when we would drive from Seward to Homer, it's a quarter inch on the map.
Right.
And it took us most of the morning to get there and most of the afternoon to get back. And you're like, what the heck? Well, I think it was in Denali. They had a same scale map of the United States with the same scale Alaska overlaid on top of it.
Including the Aleutians.
And including the Aleutians. And the if you looked at that, Alaska extends almost from East coast to West coast and from southern border to northern border. And the Kenai Peninsula is about the size of Arkansas. So that really brought it home that, holy cow, this thing is big.
It is.
And if you're trying to cram, Alaska into 2 weeks, it's like saying, I'm going to go visit the United States in 2 weeks. The lower 48 just, realize it's big. And then as far as a work camper, I think the biggest thing that I've got is know what you want to do, what you will do or what you won't do or what you want to do. Some people don't want to clean bathrooms. Other people don't care. Some are good in maintenance. Some are not. So be clear up front with whoever you're interviewing with or talking to. And don't be afraid to speak out. Come to an agreement with your park owner or manager before you accept the position so that both of you are clear and understand what the job is, what it entails, and what the expectations are. And, you know, one of the things, too, is, you know, how much will you as a work camper be allowed to do? There are some parks that this is how it's done. This is how we want it done. It's how it's been done in the past. And this is what we expect you, how we expect you to do it. Others are, you know, a lot more autonomy and independence. If you've got a better way to do something, go for it. And, so get all that cleared out and, communicated up front, and then just, keep in touch with owners and management and continuous communication, and it'll make a great, enjoyable experience for everybody involved.
How did you find your jobs in Alaska?
When we first started off, we were using the Work Camper News. And we would go through that, and we would see what jobs were out there, what they were expecting, what was offered, what amenities or perks were offered with it. And so that kind of gave us an idea of how to start. And then after we had done it a while, we knew, like I was just saying, what we wanted to do, what we didn't want to do, and would figure out, all right, we want to be in Alaska for the summer. So where do we want to kind of home base from? And then started looking at campgrounds and opportunities in the area. And when we got that narrowed down, then it would be a case of giving the park a call. And if they'd advertised in Work Camper News, we knew that they hired work campers. We'd go from there. If they didn't, or if we were just cold calling sometimes, we'd call them up and say, do you hire work campers, and start the conversation from there.
Oh, that's easy. Were people pretty receptive to that?
Yeah, I
we found a couple jobs later on like that.
Yeah, I don't think I had anybody that said, no, we don't want work campers, or no, you have to go through a certain, you know, website or what have you.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, guys. I really appreciate this information. It sounds like you had a great experience in Alaska, and I hope you get back there.
I kind of really hope so, too.
I'd like to thank Barbara and Brad Cunningham for sharing stories of their adventures and experiences work camping at various jobs. It sounds like Alaska was their favorite place to visit simply because of the variety of experiences it offered. Where else can you take a cruise to see glaciers and sea life and dock somewhere for a delicious dinner and a chance to hike in the wilderness? It could also take a train trip and enjoy some spectacular scenery along the way. They really enjoyed working for Spruce Moose Chalets near Moose Pass, Alaska. The paid job offered a great deal of flexibility to do things around whatever had to be done to serve guests and maintain 3 chalet homes. There was a full hookup RV site on the property, and the business was centrally located to a lot of popular activities. The job was also unique in that there wasn't someone looking over their shoulders every day. The Cunninghams knew in advance when guests were set to arrive or depart, and they either had to help the guests settle in or straighten up the homes when they checked out. Guests had their contact information if there was ever a problem or they needed some advice, but most of the time, the Cunninghams just stayed out of the guests' way and went wandering around by themselves. The couple offered some good advice for finding a work camping job that work campers would like, and that involved communicating upfront with employers before accepting a job so everyone was clear what they were expected to do and expecting to receive in exchange. The Cunninghams were also bold enough to reach out to prospective employers
even if they didn't see any help wanted ads. Once they settled on an area they'd like to visit, Barbara or Brad would cold call a few businesses, ask to speak to a manager, and then ask if the firm hired work campers. If they did, they'd start a conversation and actually landed a few jobs that way. The key is to take time to plan in advance so work campers have more options. I know Barbara and Brad Cunningham will enjoy some fabulous memories as a result. Today's episode is sponsored by Work Camper News. With its diamond and platinum membership tools, Work Camper News is much more than just a job listing website. When you put the tools of this professional service into action, you'll find out just how easy it can be to turn your work camping dreams into reality. The one-year memberships open the door to a one-stop shop for all things work camping. Being the original resource for work camping, you'll find the largest number of job listings, be able to connect with the community of work campers, and view resources compiled by experts who've been enjoying the RV lifestyle for many years. If you're serious about leading a successful and enjoyable work camping lifestyle, then a Diamond or Platinum membership is for you. You can even get started with a free 30-day trial by visiting www.workcamper.com/trial. Embark on new adventures today with the support of Work Camper News behind you. That's all I have for this week's show. Next week, I'll be speaking with a couple from Colorado who took up RVing after COVID killed their business. They'll provide more details on the next episode of The Work Camper Show. Thank you for listening.